AG1 is a comprehensive and convenient blend of over 70 high quality ingredients. And what that means is each morning when I wake up, before I do anything else, I drink AG1 to set me up for the day. It keeps me clear headed, full of energy and focused on whatever I need to do, like writing the fighting cock, for example. One scoop once a day before breakfast and that's it. I've actually found that I've not been needing coffee in the morning to get me started. I've still been drinking coffee because I love coffee, but it's not because it's like a necessity to do so. AG1 is made out of the highest quality ingredients subject to the strictest manufacturing standards. AG1 is NSF certified for sport, and this process involves exhaustive testing and verification that every serving of AG1 is exactly what you see on the label. If you want to take ownership of your health, try AG1 and get a free 1 year supply of vitamin D and 5 free AG1 travel packs for your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/thefightingcock. That's drinkag1.com/thefightingcock to get started. And to help the podcast. Thank you very much. Have a great day and enjoy the show.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? Of course you would. And when it comes to great rates on insurance, Geico can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with homeowners or renters coverage. Plus, add an easy-to-use mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more, and GEICO is an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save. It's easy. Simply go to GEICO.com or contact your local agent today.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? Of course you would. And when it comes to great rates on insurance, Geico can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with homeowners or renters coverage. Plus, add an easy-to-use mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more, and Geico is an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com or contact your local agent today.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? Of course you would. And when it comes to great rates on insurance, Geico can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with homeowners or renters coverage. Plus, add an easy-to-use mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more, and GEICO is an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save. It's easy. Simply go to GEICO.com or contact your local agent today.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It's the fighting. It's the fighting. It's the fighting. It's the fighting. Cock!
A camel turnip!
Hello, welcome to episode 55, season 10 of the Fighting Cock podcast. Today I'm joined on the line by Billy T. How you doing, mate?
Hello, very good, mate.
Are you very good? I mean, that's quite positive, isn't it?
Well, mate, the pubs are open. Life's slowly getting back to normal. It looks like we might finally be getting rid of this virus, or Jose Mourinho, as he's also known.
Flown is Phil. How are you doing, mate?
Good evening. I'm recovering.
Recovering from what?
From the absolute train crash that was Tottenham Hotspur yesterday.
Is there anything been like that's happened in your life that you felt like maybe it compares to what's happening right now? Some sort of illness you've gone through? Have you ever bruised your knee, broken an arm? Like, what sort of recovery have you experienced that's comparable to what we've had to deal with as Tottenham Hotspur fans after we just got beat by Man United 3-1 at home?
Many, many moons ago when I was in school, we had to write our names and addresses on some envelopes. And in those envelopes were our GCSE results, which were going to arrive at our gaff 2-3 months later. So my mum's all excited. She gets the results and she sits by my bedside and reads out my results, which were pretty awful. And the look of disappointment on her face stays with me to this day. And yesterday's game, I think, will stay with me for a long time. Just like that.
Can I just go back to that personal turmoil, T?
Yeah.
You wrote your own like expected grades on a piece of paper.
No. So that is kind of a bit of a superfluous point. But I think they were going to send the results by post, and they just had us write the names and address on the envelope, and they put the results inside them.
Billy, as someone who teaches children, would you advise that to be a thing that the students should do?
I mean, it's a bit Brendan Rodgers, isn't it, to be fair? I'm not sure about that one. Not sure about that.
Yeah. 28 years ago, to be fair. So.
Yeah, everything was fucked back then.
Yeah, things are different. You used to wipe your ass on tracing paper back then.
Do you remember that? That's not what you've just said there isn't, like, people might be listening, like the fans of Tottenham Hotspur who listen to the podcast from the US don't understand what it means when you say using tracing paper as toilet paper when you're an 8-year-old boy.
Yeah.
It was like that.
Toilet roll. That was toilet roll. It was tracing paper. It had LEA written on it as well. Flav, you and I are both from London. You know what LEA means, you know what I mean? That's London.
Is it local? So mine was Ilya.
Ilya.
So I you know, 100% get it. It was bad. It doesn't surprise me that there are kids out there that you know, our age that still have trouble going to the toilet.
Oh, yeah, probably stand up to wipe as well.
Ilya, Jesus Christ, I haven't thought about that since I was like about 8, where I was
throwback.
Being abused by the only toilet paper I had in my life. We had a question from Mopo Hotspur. It says, we've lost 18 points from winning positions this season. Fix the individual defensive errors and we are all having a different conversation. True or false, Billy?
I think it's true to some extent, but you have to, like, that's, you know, it's something that's been so, like, constant throughout our season where it's not an irregularity anymore. It has to come at the foot of the manager. Like, if it's constantly happening game after game after game, there has to be something done to change it. Like, every single week we seem to have a new back four. Yesterday we had a different back four to the one we had against Newcastle. It's chopping and changing every week.
16th time. We've had a new combination of defensive players,
and yet our players are sometimes brain dead. But it's why are they brain dead? Why are they making these mistakes? It's because their confidence is totally gone, and that has to at the end of the day has to fall to the manager. I think, and our players are susceptible to, you know, having their moments of individual errors, and that they do. But the constant it happening, like, all season since December, has got to be at the fault of the manager, I think.
T, what do you think that our defensive errors could contribute to our league position and where we find ourselves, or is it about the manager?
It's just a constant chopping and changing. I mean, Dyer has kind of been persona non grata since the Zagreb train wreck. You know, him and Sissoko haven't played a minute, I believe, since then. Maybe Sissoko came on a sub at one point. But these guys are just thrown in yesterday and performed as expected. It's a shocker, really, because, you know, I guess the other suppliers, if they play well, they'll play every week. But when we were top of the league, there were minimal changes each week. And then now he's changing And he's making all these wholesale changes and they're not really benefiting. So I don't know.
Is he panicking, do you think, like in terms of defensive lineup?
I think he is panicking because he has no idea who his back four wants to be. Like, if you take Joe Roden, for example, who's at the moment probably you would say our best defender, he didn't even put him in the Europa League squad, which now looking back to it is absolutely like a comical decision when you look at how poor we were in some of those Europa League games. To not put what is now looking like our best defender in that squad is just ridiculous. Toby, who hasn't had his best season, but he's still one of our most competent defenders. He seems to be absolutely nowhere near the team anymore. It's a constantly different back four every game. And you can't build that sort of the relationship as a back four if you're not playing week in, week out. And Liverpool had the same problem, but theirs was because their centre-backs were getting injured every single week. We haven't had any injuries for a while to those centre-backs. So it's ridiculous, I think.
I was quite alarmed when Alderweireld didn't start. I rate Dier. I just said many times, I don't rate Sanchez that highly. But I think Toby Alderweireld is our best defender. If you look at me, just in terms of experience, you'd want him in there. His legs haven't gone. His legs are not gone in the same way that the Tongans had. So why isn't he playing? And if the issue that he's not playing is because of some sort of relationship breakdown with Jose Mourinho, which I don't know if that's true or not, but if it is, then that's on Jose Mourinho because he needs to ensure that his relationships with all of the members of the squad are such that they're available to play. That's like, you know, football management 101, I would imagine.
And I think last time I was on here, I was still with Jose, I was still with Mourinho. I thought, you know, it was when we just won those league games and Bale was playing well and we looked like we were playing well. Since then, my biggest problem with him is these personal grudges he seems to have with these players. Like, Bale has not played since that Arsenal game when the whole team was rubbish, but he seems to be scapegoating Bale. He's not started a game since then. Toby has barely started a game since then. It's like, you know, we need to put these personal grudges aside and play our best players to have any chance of winning these football matches. That's ultimately what's cost us, I think.
Is it the relationships with the players that's impacted your opinion of Jose Mourinho over the last
100%, 100%. Yeah, you don't, like, for example, Dele Alli, he's sort of been frozen out again. It's like these constant little patches where players are frozen out. And then he think, you know, the players that he ends up playing end up making a mistake. He brings the frozen out players back in. It's just like a constant cycle of freezing players out. And it's just been such a terrible string of form as a result of it. And it's ultimately what's led to believe that, you know, he's got to go, really, I think.
That the point you made about Bale, when, you know, going into that Arsenal game, he was flying, like, and we were being really sort of, you know, expansive and creative, and we were looking to play attractive football. It looked like something was happening. The finally we could see Son, Kane and Bale together in some sort of attacking force, and he had a bad game against Arsenal, which wasn't, due to him playing Doherty and Bale on the right hand side, which was an experiment in the most extreme, and Arsenal exploited that. But before that, all the evidence, the five games before that, it showed that Gareth Bale was definitely the guy to play in as one part of that forward three. And then when Son gets injured, then you definitely you look to Gareth Bale at that point. If he can't make a... what I've got... excuse me. Fuck, sorry. The one thing I can't reconcile is the fact that he's got a player as good as Gareth Bale and he can't make it work in a system that he wants to. That's one of the things that really confuses me, because he is a great player. Wales use him and he's fantastic. And I'm sure that there are elements to Wales game defensively that they're exploited by the fact that Gareth Bale is playing. But we have him in our squad and he still is he's proven in parts to be an absolutely world-class player. If the fact that you can't get him into that team is mental to me, T.
The other issue I have is Son is not in good form at all. He's not had a good game for a very long time. And this was hidden in part by Bale's upturn in form. And Now, obviously, Lucas Moura had a little purple patch. You know, he was in and out of the team and he's been moved out wide. These things come under scrutiny when we're not winning games and we're giving away leads. I mean, you know, when you're winning, these things don't matter if you've got personal grudges. When Dele Alli wasn't making squads, we were top of the league, so it was fine. But now these things come under scrutiny. He's leaving out. I just don't get the logic of picking Eric Dier yesterday. I don't see what that added. Eric Dier is a talker, and maybe that helps Rodon as a younger defender. Maybe that's the logic I saw. But when I saw that team lineup, I just immediately lost hope. But we started fairly well, so the fuck do I know?
Yeah, we did. And there were moments in that game where, even in the second half, it felt like we had opportunities. Like, we were being able to play through them. And this is something that I've witnessed throughout this season under Jose Mourinho, is that when you give responsibility to the players and allow them to play, they can do it. We our squad's good enough to do it. And there were moments in that game against Manchester United, and probably that game against Manchester United was a microcosm of the rest of the season that we've witnessed so far. But we did play through them at times. And you know, when you look at their lineup, but certainly the names on their team sheet when the game started, you thought, well, that, you know, on paper they're probably better than us. But we had our moments in that game. And I've been sort of clinging on to that idea that we are decent. We still can do something this season, but there's only so many times you can fail to achieve without sort of starting to question the head of the fish. And if the fish stinks, it stinks from the head. Barcelona Spurs, he says, what would your son have to do to shame you for him not to feed him for days? This is a response to Jose Mourinho said something about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's comments about Heung-min Son going down after McTominay flicked him in the eye. What did you make of that whole debacle? If it was a debacle, T.
It's just deflection from Mourinho. I mean, Solskjaer said the same thing when Martial got sent off when Lamela hits him. It seems to have a thing for kids.
Yeah, he's got a thing for kids and a thing for like bad parenting as well, isn't he?
Oh, I mean, you know, his own star boy is out there feeding the kid and he's bringing out that narrative. What's he doing, you know? But it's for Mourinho to even credit it with a response is just deflection. I don't expect Mourinho to say this is all my fault and I'll fix it, but he's not really gone through forensic detail of Mourinho's press conference yesterday because I don't want to see his face right now.
But yeah.
I don't imagine that he's taking responsibility for any of this, so... Yeah, it was just deflection. What would my son have to do for me to shame him, not to feed him for days? Probably wearing an Arsenal shirt.
I think not to sister. we've got another question from C. Margolius. He says, you're Daniel Levy for 1 week, Billy. What do you do? 1 week, you're in Daniel Levy's shoes. What do you do? How do you fix this? Billy.
You might have lost him.
Well, go on, T. How do you fix this? 1 week. Daniel Levy.
I think the first thing to do is sack Mourinho. I think I'll definitely get everyone on side. Who do you replace him with?
It would get him on side, but what's that cost?
Oh, it's costing us losing these games, isn't it? I mean, I've said all through the season, and I'll probably say it now, that removing Mourinho doesn't guarantee us being, you know, world beaters, but I just think the players need a new message, the fans need a new voice, the players aren't responding to what he's doing. You know, he was hanging on because of the Carabao Cup final, but he just can't seem to solve any problems, Mourinho, so that'd probably be the first thing I'd do, is sack him.
Billy, if you was Daniel Levy for a week, what would you do?
Yeah, I saw this question and it's kind of made me think. Throughout Daniel Levy's reign, there's been so many what ifs. It's like, what if, you know, we never left the stadium? What if he backed Harry Redknapp when we were, you know, flying in the league? What if he backed Pochettino when we were flying in the league? And this is another what-if situation that we find ourselves in. And it comes from the top of Daniel Levy. He never seems to be able to take the final step, and it's always seems to backfire on us. It's backfired again. So I think we're now in a position where we're in a huge what-if with Mourinho, because if we sacked him now and then we lost that League Cup final, it would be another, you know, what-if. We had kept Mourinho, would the final result have been different? If we don't sack him now and we lose that League Cup final, it's going to be, well, what if we did sack him? So I just think we're constantly in a cycle of what ifs. We're nearly there. We're nearly going to take this next step. But under Levy's reign, it's just never something that we've managed to do, really. So to answer your question, I have no idea what we should do. I just think if you got rid of Jose now and you got the players happy again and playing, our team will be sick. Like, we've got Bale, we've got, you know, Ndombele, Gio, and these players aren't being able to express themselves. I think he's lost the players totally. But then Jose's reputation in finals, you know, it's a really difficult decision. But it's a symptom of our constant, you know, history under Daniel Levy. And, you know, we always find ourselves in these what-if situations, I think.
Well, we've got another question from Tom81. And I was born in 81, and I'm pretty sure I don't look exactly like Tom. But if I did, this is maybe the question I'd be answered, and I would have a Union Jack in my handle as well. When will this thing, and he's put a picture of Daniel Levy, this thing ever be accountable for the last, for the 20 years of failure at Tottenham Hotspur? T, has, like, if we're just taking this question on face value, has the last 20 years of Daniel Levy's reign been a failure?
I don't think it's been a failure, but Billy makes a valid point about what ifs, and there's times when they've needed Levy to make the right decision to push us to the next level. And, you know, arguably he's not done that. And the two barren windows of Pochettino, as we say every week, is one, not backing Redknapp in that window when we were linked with Aguero and Rossi. And, you know, there's just been these little sliding doors moments, and he just never seemed to come out on top. I don't think it's 20 years of failure, but it's one of those things that's come up again. You know, when Spurs are doing badly, you know, the Enoch Art mob are out again, and everyone's either a Levy lover or a Levy hater, and me, as ever, I'm just ambivalent. I don't dislike Levy. He's pushed the club forward to a degree, but, you know, I don't know, it just feels like It just feels like we're almost always on the precipice of doing something big, and it doesn't happen.
Yeah, no, I get it. I understand completely, but I feel like he's over the last 20 years he has progressed at football club. The way the disappointment we feel now when we lose to Manchester United at home is different to what it would have been like even in the Yo era, or you know, even Harry Redknapp. Certainly before that, and Christian Gross, and if you're going further back, Peter Shreves and whatnot. No, these were eras where that we, as Spurs fans, we didn't even think about the top four, like a major European competition, let alone Europa League. Like when Spurs got into the Europa League in 2006, and when we went away to Prague, and I went away with Spurs to Prague in 2006, it was the best trip ever, because we were doing something that we had never done before. And I feel like maybe it's partly the fact that the Premier League has exploded and everybody's expectations go along with it. But I feel like what we expect now is, and part of the reason why it's so painful to see us lose at home to Manchester United now, is down to the fact that we've progressed. So I'd vehemently deny the fact that the last 20 years have been a failure. Like, if winning trophies is a barometer of how successful a football club is, that's 100% he's failed. But Daniel Levy is the owner of this football club, and everything he does should lead towards glory or success. And the fact is, in the last 20 years, that hasn't happened. But we're in a better position now than we have been ever to actually mount a proper Jaun at any major competition. And I do kind of hold on to the fact that we haven't had the best ride. We've had, we've built this massive stadium that's fucking cost us a fortune. We've built the training centre. And then we haven't been able to settle into this new stadium at all. We haven't been able to reap the benefits, the financial benefits of having a stadium like that. Like, as Spurs fans, if we're going to the game and we are having to fucking walk past Noodle and Nan sort of food outlets and home-brewed beer in our stadium, like, that's good, you know, financially viable, excellent things to have in a stadium in the modern era. But we haven't been able to really reap the benefits of them because we haven't had a season that isn't interrupted by a team that's fallen apart under Pochettino or a new manager under Mourinho, Wembley disrupting half of the season when we moved in, Mourinho's tactics failing, and you know, we just haven't had a chance to settle in and look at the finances and enjoy the as a football club in terms of what we can do in the transfer market, enjoy the revenue that would come from the stadium. I don't think we've had that moment of stasis where everything just settles down and we can just function normally. And because of that, I feel like Daniel Levy needs more time. He should be given more time, and it should, in the next 5 years, that's how long I think that it should take, 5 years for him to properly invest in the team.
And I think in terms of success for Levy, I think Levy's success, what defines success for Levy as a fan is very different to what defines success for Levy as an owner and Joe Lewis. So a fan, we'd look at trophies and we'd look at constantly improving the team and like being well up there in the league and stuff. But for Joe Lewis, it's all about, you know, are we making money? Is the club marketable and all that kind of stuff? And in that area, Levy has, without a doubt, been incredibly successful. He's made us, you know, I think it's just come out that we're in the top 10 richest clubs in the world currently today. And we have a, you know, world-class stadium. But we've won one trophy in his reign at the beginning. So I think whether you think Levy's success is very different if you're a fan and if you're the owner, Joe Lewis. So in terms of Levy being accountable to Joe Lewis, you know, at the moment he's making him money. He's progressed the forward, progressed the club immeasurably since he started. So I've got to think about that as well.
How I'd counter that, Billy, is that I am a fan and I do want all those things, but I'm also sort of understanding of what's gone into creating the foundations for which we could potentially, you know, do very well. And I just feel like it's so easy to say, oh, we didn't sign for 2 seasons, or, you know, since we moved into the new stadium, nothing's changed. But we didn't sign in the 2 seasons because of the stadium. Pochettino didn't do well, you know, after those barren transfer windows because of the stadium. We now have that stadium and it's built, and, you know, the payments going back to the banks and whoever we loan money off to do it are, you know, not substantial. They're ones that we can manage. So let's just see what happens next. If in 4 years, 5 years, there isn't another pandemic and there isn't a... If football just resumes, then I feel like at that point you can say, all right, Daniel Levy, Enoch, Joe Lewis, whoever it is, isn't what we need.
And I think we're at a very, very important point right now because we've made huge strides both on the pitch and off the pitch in the last 5-6 years. But at the moment, we're going backwards very, very quickly. So unless something changes within the next, you know, few months, it's a huge, huge summer for us yet again. All that hard work is going to be undone. We're sort of heading more towards mid-table than we are the top of the league, which is a serious worry for everyone. Because even though you talk about success and marketability and all that kind of stuff, it comes to a point where you need to be playing in the Champions League for any of that stuff to be achievable. And we're at the moment, we seem to be sort of going backwards rather than forwards. But something's got to change.
Yeah, definitely, 100%. Do you think that one of the things that he's on Daniel Levy right now is he has to make a decision sooner or later about Jose Mourinho. And we're going to come on to what might happen from that point onwards. But it feels like it's becoming untenable for Jose Mourinho.
TV. I think
Sorry, go on.
Yeah, I think it's a matter of when, not if, isn't it, to be honest? And the when is now a difficult decision because of the cup final and because how long do you allow this? Because if we've got seven games to go, if you introduce a new manager now, we could win all seven of those games and, you know, be well up there for Europe and stuff. If we wait till the end of the season, we could have lost the cup final. We could be finishing eighth, ninth. Harry Kane's going to want to leave and all this. So again, as we said earlier, it's a very difficult decision to make now. He's got to make the right call though.
T, what would you say?
Something I've said all along was that Mourinho was available, so Levy had to pounce and get him. So that makes sense. And I'm not going to say I'm massively Jose in, but he's a manager and I want him to do well. Wanted him to do well. So for that reason, I wanted him to see the season out. But I just, at this moment in time, there's not many top managers available. So you know, if someone listens to me tub thumping saying, get rid of the cunt. And we do we bring in, I don't know, do we bring in Rafa Benitez, who is just as pragmatic? Do we have a Levy and Mason combo? Is there a Ledley King and Mason combo?
We'll come on to what might happen next, because we've got some odds from William Hill shortly. You'll be excited to hear. But I think we're all sick, and I've been like a major... I think I'm more sort of patient than most Spurs fans are. And that's not to say I know more. I don't. I know fuck all. I just don't know, talk about how I feel. But I think we can all agree right now that we don't want to see that pickled onion on our bench anymore.
Well, the season ticket renewal's open today. So, you know, I guess people are going to wait till June the 3rd until they make the decision.
Quinn Wilson, he says, as a relatively new Tottenham supporter from 2014 onwards, what would you say to someone who hasn't experienced an ugly patch with our club like this before? Billy, how would you explain Tottenham to someone who had only followed us since 2014, which would have been when Pochettino took over, I think?
Well, first of all, I would say you've had a pretty incredible running because you've watched us play in a Champions League final. Yeah. But I think this misery now that we're going through is what, to be honest, what makes being a Tottenham fan, it's what we're about, isn't it? It's like our bread and butter. We're always that team that nearly gets there and then fucks up. And if you can't stick with this and you can't, you know, get through this misery and you can't sort of deal with it and process it, then you're at the wrong club because it's just a constant, constant being let down. But that's what we love, isn't it? That's why we love Tottenham. It's always these terrible lows that we're going through right now will always make the next high even better, and that's what we love as Tottenham fans. It's that we, you know, we love the chase, and then hopefully one day we will get that success and it will be so much better than it would be if we hadn't gone through these ridiculous low points that only we seem to suffer. These, you know, incredible events that happen to us and no other club, all this stuff that we always go through. I think the lows are incredibly low with Tottenham fans, but the highs are incredibly high.
When we achieve it, it's like Quinn. It's unfortunate that you haven't sort of witnessed the low points, because part of the reason why going to Prague in 2006, I know that was 8 years before you started joining football, but part of the reason why going to Prague in a Europa League qualifying game in September was so magical was because we hadn't been in Europe. Like, Spurs hadn't had a sniff around Europe for years. And we got it. We finally got it. And that wasn't winning the trophy. All it was finishing, I think, was it? Yeah, we finished fifth in the league. I think under Yol. We finished fifth in the league and we qualified for the Europa League. And it was the best 2 days, 3 days of my life. Like, easily up there, because we hadn't had anything like that before, and we had it. We got it when we won the League Cup against Chelsea in 2008, when Woodgate scored that goal. It bounced off his head and went into the net. The feeling I felt at that moment was like nothing else I'd felt. When we beat Arsenal 5-1 at White Hart Lane, which was the semi-final before that game at Wembley against Arsenal. Against Chelsea. The feeling I felt in that game, which wasn't winning the trophy, just because we had so many lows before it, so we had no expectation of beating Arsenal over two legs. We had no expectation of beating Chelsea in the final, but we did it. And when we do it, the feeling is
indescribable. And the problem with expecting so much as we do right now is that when we achieve it, it doesn't quite feel as good as it used to. And that's one of the worries I have. But if you started supporting Spurs in 2014, then you're on.
And it's
go on.
And it's all relative as well. Like, a disastrous season for us now is finishing eighth in the league. So, you know, we've come a long, long way since, you know, from back in the day. It's all relative. But I think there's probably quite a large part of us, if we're totally honest. There's a part of us that, you know, enjoys this sort of role in the universe we have of always being that club that fucks up. And it's just what we're here to do, and we might as well embrace it. We're always going to be that Tottenham. So fuck it, we might as well embrace it.
So, that's interesting you say that, because I want us to be the team that wins it all. But I'm not uncomfortable in losing valiantly.
Can you actually imagine that? Can you actually imagine if we went through like three league seasons in a row and won like three or four trophies in those seasons? You can't comprehend it, can you? Like, it's just not something.
Imagine being in the stadium, going away with Spurs, and we're smashing every team up, and people looking around going, "This ain't Spurs. This ain't proper Tottenham." Like, I'll tell you about proper Tottenham. That's losing.
Sounds shit, doesn't it? I don't even want success. Fuck trophies. I just want to finish ninth.
I mean, he was supporting us under Pochettino, so there was some relative success during that time. But it makes it feel alive. It's like, Flav, you said this countless times before. A lot of teams, anything they have is how their football team gets on. The Spurs is so much more than just the results on the pitch. You know, obviously during the pandemic, you can't really hug and spit in each other's mouths like we used to do. But I just think there's so much more to Spurs than just the results. And you know, the good times aren't that far away. I mean, I'm feeling a bit down on what Mourinho's heading the spike right now. But you know, we beat Everton, and you know, I'm in love with them again. And football, there's so many peaks and troughs. This season is an abnormal season, not just because we're not doing well, but just because of the pandemic and teams being up and down. So I just think, as Flav said, you just got to signpost the good times. And since 2014, we've had a load of good results and the Ajax game. So you just got to kind of think back to how you felt in those times when you're feeling down like this. You know, just know that those good times are going to come again.
When we're shit, I feel like we're paying in. We're putting our money in. Like, I know we financially put our money into Tottenham, and all of us spend way too much money following our football club because of the way football's gone. But like, in terms of, you know, enjoying future successes, you're paying in when you're watching football that you don't want to watch. Like, I remember when it was in Ramos's first season, or his first full season, and we were really excited. We bought Darren Bent, Giovanni De Santos, I think. Loads of lovely players, and we were all really excited. And then, we were two points from eight games. One of those games, I think, Ramos's last game was against Wigan, and Steve Bruce's Wigan. See, imagine how shit Wigan is, and imagine adding Steve Bruce to Wigan. That's what Spurs were drawing 0-0 against Steve Bruce's Wigan, and
I don't remember that game.
Oh, I was in the Park Lane, and we were singing "We are Tottenham, Super Tottenham, we are Tottenham from the Lane." Over and over again. It was literally one of the loudest supports I've ever been a part of. It was fantastic. I felt like properly attached to the football club. I felt like this is why I, you know, go football. This is why, you know, why football to a certain degree, the things that happen in the pitch isn't associated to why we all love our football club. So what was happening on the pitch was terrible. It was shit. Ramos was about to be sacked. We were in all sorts of trouble. We're probably going to get relegated. It was that bad. But the Tottenham faithful in White Hart Lane that day, were loud. Really loud, and it was stoic, and it was backs against the wall, and regardless of what had happened, we were Tottenham from the Lane, and it was just fucking brilliant. And do you know what? A part of me would give up all of these aspirations of Champions League football or winning the league or finding the next greatest manager, Nagelsmann or whatever it might be, just to take me back to that place where I was just comfortable with the idea that Tottenham could do something one day in the future, but right now, being a part of the collective was more important.
And I think if Will Smith walked into my house now with the pen for Men in Black and he said, look, I can erase everything about Tottenham from your memory and I'll make you a Man City fan, I would tell him to fuck off, and then I wouldn't do it, because I think this is what we live for at the end of the day, isn't it? This is what we signed up for, and I wouldn't change it for anything.
Mm. This is what we signed up for. That's it.
Fuck off, Will Smith, basically.
Will Smith can get in the fucking bin. If he come in the house now, I'd set the dog in him. I really would, because I wouldn't change any of it. I wouldn't change any of it, and I know it's difficult. Like I do this show on I'm doing some work with a big company. So I'm trying to downplay this without sounding like a fucking dickhead, but I do a show with a company on Monday mornings, and part of that work is working with DT from, as you probably know, Arsenal Fan TV, and I just thought that, you know, he's probably all right, you know, he's, you know, what you see is probably not what you actually get, but yeah, it is exactly that, and it isn't DT, it's all Arsenal fans, it's all of them, and what we have, you know, and just to go back to the question with from Shut Up Patrick, is that we will never be them. We could never be them, and we would never want to be them. Despite all the things that their club have achieved for them, they remain the weird little scumbags that they are. And it's important, I think, as Spurs fans, to not be that. And, you know, fuck it. We don't win trophies. We don't win league titles. We don't, you know. I tell you what, we do finish above Arsenal fucking 5 years on the bounce. That's something. Like, this is going to be tough for you, actually, Patrick. This is going to be tough for you, because if we don't finish above Arsenal this season, that's going to be something that's going to be really tough for you, because we lived through that for our entire Tottenham Hotspur existence, not finishing above Arsenal. And for the fact that we've done that in the last 5 years, four of which was under Pochettino. That you know, that's going to be tough for you, but it's going to be a case.
And I think
of,
this year as well. I think this year as well, it's going to be like finishing eighth and seventh Arsenal, Tottenham. I think no club has really got the right to brag over the other one. It's like the world's tallest dwarf kind of situation, isn't it? We've both had a pretty terrible season. So, you know, if we finish above them, great. But if they finish above us, we're both, you know, it's both embarrassing.
George Piaccio, or whatever. Which of our former managers would you have in interim charge for our cup final? They have to be alive or unemployed. So would you take... Oh, Pochettino isn't available because he's employed.
That would be Redknapp, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I think Redknapp might be able to pull it off.
Ramos?
Imagine Shearwood though. That would just be worth it for the whole factor of the fact that Shearwood could win us a trophy. That would just be absolutely brilliant.
Fucking hell, I'd be suicidal.
Yeah, I'd actually not want us to win one if he was in charge. you remember, like, that was just before Pochettino's reign. Like, what are your memories of Sherwood's reign at Tottenham, T?
Hatred, anger, not going to games because I was sulking at him being our manager. I just think it's one of the worst periods. I can't say one of the worst periods, because we've almost gone out of business, so I'm not going to go as far as that. But for me, there were pretty dark days, and it was just... Oh, I just hated him so much. I've not hated a manager as much as I've hated him. And no, I wasn't. I mean, obviously now you don't look forward to games because you know it's going to be a bit boring, but it felt like, this times 1,000 under Sherwood.
Billy, what are your memories of Sherwood?
I remember one time under Sherwood, I got the train up to Liverpool away. It was a huge journey. I sat in the worst seat imaginable. I literally could not see either goal from my seat because of the way that the railings in the stadium work. And Tim Sheward, I don't know if you remember, he did not even come out for the game. He sat in the stands, I believe.
Yeah, he did, yeah.
And we lost 4-0, and I think that's probably my lowest point as a Tottenham fan. that is, you know, travelling all the way to Liverpool, I couldn't see either goal, couldn't see any of the match hardly. Didn't even have a fucking manager on the sideline. It's just, what am I doing? This is... So when you talk about supporting us from 2014, those are the kind of, you know, those are the lows that you might have skipped if you skipped the Sheward era, like...
Did you have a good day, though, Billy? I imagine, despite the football, you had a good day.
I had a good day, mate. Yeah, I had a good day. But, yeah, that was a real, real low point on his management in general. And we seem to be, as you know, comes back to full circle, we seem to be closer to that period now than we were in the 5 years that he left. So we've gone backwards again.
100%. William Hill, our backers and our partnership bookies. They're also the main partners of Tottenham Hotspur Football Club. And they have Jose as 3-1 to be the next manager to leave. And no manager to leave is a favourite at 11-8. So they actually think that no manager will leave. But Steve Bruce is the next at 4-1. So apart from no manager leaving, Jose Mourinho is favourite at 3-1. Like, can you see this, Billy? Towards the end of the season, is there any chance that Jose Mourinho is sacked? Like, what do you think as a fan?
I think it's a difficult one. I think the funny thing about those odds is we've basically kept Steve Bruce in a job because he fucking outplayed us a week ago. We got outplayed by a man who has gravy coursing through his veins, and we managed to, you know, give him another few weeks in the job. I can't really imagine a situation that gets so bad that we'd have to sack him before the end of the season, because unless we've got Everton on Friday night. If they beat us, it's that cup final that I think is always going to keep him there. After that, I think if it gets if we get smashed in that final and, you know, we keep relentlessly losing the league games, he could go. But I'd be very surprised if he went before the end of summer, to be honest.
T?
I don't think he gets sacked before the season ends, realistically. I think we're just going to have to ride it out. But yeah, Steve Bruce won yesterday as well, so you know, probably, I think last week's game probably gave him a bit of a bounce in his step. But you know, thinking with my head, I think Mourinho sees us out for better or worse.
What if the odds were that Steve Bruce was going to take over Jose Mourinho at Tottenham Hotspur? If that happened, boys, would you give up following Spurs?
You know what we said about this is what I signed up for? That is not what I fucking signed up for. I would fuck right off. I'd get Will Smith back in the fucking room.
yeah. We love a bit of failure. We're happy like not doing well, but fucking Steve Bruce, imagine his big rubbery head turning up, going, "All right, Harry Kane, right, this is what I want you to do."
And he fucking outplayed us. That was, for me, was the last straw of Mourinho's. That Newcastle, they didn't just like draw with us, they actually outplayed us for 90 minutes. It was fucking embarrassing. Another low point.
How low is this point? How low is it?
You talk about low points. At the end of the day, we're six points off the top four. It's like, and we're in a cup final. You know, it's all relative, isn't it? But it's just, I think what's been lost is the connection between the players and the fans and the manager. It's all totally come to a complete standstill, and that connection's gone, and that's why it feels so low. You know, in terms of relative success, in terms of the league, we're still only 6 points off the top four, and we're in a cup final. That's not, on the face of it, that bad, but I think because it's so like miserable and the it's toxic at Tottenham, I think that's why it feels a lot lower than maybe it is on paper.
Nagelsmann is a favourite to take over from Jose Mourinho. I won't sort of ask what you think about Nagelsmann, because do you know much about him, Billy?
I can't claim to know that much about him. All I know is that, you know, if you look at some of the clubs that he's linked with, like Bayern Munich and Real Madrid, and he seems to have done a very good job without spending a lot of money, would seem to be the one that would hopefully take over. But again, he's a very, very sought after manager. You know, it'd be a miracle to get him. I think
yeah,
he's very, very strongly linked with the Bayern Munich job at the moment.
Well, I don't know if he's any better than any any of them. I don't know if he's better Pochettino or Jose Mourinho, but if we can get him, he's got a nice, sexy surname. He comes from another country. He is young. Just get him on all of those factors, I think.
I think we'd get a director of football with him. I think that would be helpful.
Dennis Wise. Get Dennis Wise in.
It took me a second to clock what you just said. Can you imagine?
Do you know whose odds have shortened on being the next Tottenham Hotspur manager? Rafa Benitez.
God, isn't he in China working?
I don't know, but the odds are short. Like we can get, if there's a manager in China working, he's definitely, if it is Rafa Benitez and there's a club like Tottenham going, we need you to come over, will you come? He's going to definitely cut his losses and leave that contract and come over, surely. Like surely he's earned God knows amounts managing in China. What's your reaction to Rafa Benitez potentially taking over at Tottenham?
I think the thing for me is it's too similar to Mourinho. He's a pragmatic manager. He's got a history of good history of winning trophies. But I think, you know, with what's happened under Levy, we tend to normally go for a big name manager and then a project manager and then a big name manager. We seem to be in that sort of endless cycle again. I think the way that it's going, I think we're at that point now where we're going to have to get a project manager in. I don't think Benitez is the right person. I think because of the way that Mourinho has not worked out, for me, it's just too much of a similar appointment. And you'll probably see the same sort of things happening. I think we've got to go for a bit of a palate cleanser, to be honest.
What about you, T?
Yeah, I think I would have wanted Benitez in 2014. Don't think I'd want this incarnation. Very similar to Mourinho, and it can get ugly with him as well because he's quite an abrasive character, and I think we probably need someone who's going to put an arm around the players at least, and I don't see that in Benitez.
What did you say about Brendan Rodgers then?
A bottler, isn't he? I mean, he got spanked yesterday, although they almost came back into it. Just seems to bottle it, so maybe he's got Tottenham in his DNA.
Yes. It's
definitely a better-looking football, and if he does go to Brendan Rodgers, it would be because of the results, not because of him being awful, an awful human being. So,
Billy, would you take a bottler that plays attractive football?
I think, do you know what? I think Brendan Rodgers would be a decent appointment just because we're at, like T said just now, we need a manager that's going to put his arm around the players, get us playing good football again. He looks, you know, he's done that at Leicester. He did it at Liverpool as well. Got him playing some of the best football in the league. Leicester plays some of the best football in the league. And he does seem to have this bottling thing in him. But, you know, hopefully that's what we're all about, isn't it, really, the bottling. So, fuck it. Might as well go for another one.
What do you think Allardyce would get us into the top four?
No.
What? Why? Why?
I think his time is gone. I think his time is gone.
He's never been given the opportunity, though. Maybe Tottenham Hotspur should give Sam Allardyce the opportunity.
Did have the opportunity once, and it went tits up. He was at Newcastle, but Newcastle were good, and it didn't go well for him there.
And England.
Yeah. I mean, what I'm going to say is that if you are going to get rid of Mourinho now in the summer, you need to rethink the structure, the director of football. When we brought in Martin Yol, we had Frank Arneson in there, who's a director of football. So maybe we need to be thinking about getting rid of Hitchin, getting a proper director of football, and maybe then picking a manager, perhaps.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point because it seems to me like Hitchin is sort of buying a lot of the players. I think this summer we had sort of a mixture of some Jose Mourinho picks and some Hitchin picks. And then what you're left with is a manager who's sort of not going to pick these players that Hitchin's picked. You know, it doesn't seem like Bale, for example, was a Jose Mourinho signing. I think that was a Daniel Levy signing. You know, Stephen Bergwijn, I think, was a Hitchin signing. And you've got all of these sort of signing from different people. It needs to be feeding into each other because there's no sort of real system in place at the moment. I think a director of football is as important for us as a manager at the moment.
Okay. All right. Well, this has been the Fighting Cup podcast. Thank you very much, Billy, for getting involved.
My pleasure, mate. Up the Spurs, up the misery.
It'd be great just to, after a proper good pumping, just to get you on and like not sort of have to break down the misery that is Tottenham Hotspur.
Because we love the misery. That's what we're about. Fuck it.
Yeah. It's harder though, isn't it, when you're in lockdown and you've got no one to embrace after the misery. Like after that game, like when I was on the sofa, you know, we just lost 3-1 and the game went the way it did. And I was just like, this is shit.
And I should have gone around Eric Lamella's house, mate. He loves a party. He would have welcomed you in.
No, I just wanted my mates and, you know, like a proper, like, sort of weird, horrible little speedy coke bump. That's what I wanted.
Oh, that's what we're getting back to now. The pubs are open today. If we're going to lose the next 7 games, at least we can go to the pub. Fuck it.
Indeed. Felonious Filth, mate, thank you so much.
Flav, I'm going to say you've done it again for the second week running.
What?
The abuse that Heung-Min Son and Daniel Levy got.
I wasn't aware of it.
Oh, someone talked about Daniel Levy being a tight Jew and Heung-Min Son got a bit of racial abuse for diving.
From who? From Spurs fans?
I think the abuse for Heung-Min Son came from Man United fans.
Oh, this is because the lash out. What did you make of that? That sort of lash out.
I thought it was quite funny. It should. I think it'd go to the stud, but you know, it's just sad that you know he's getting racially abused, and Spurs come up with a very generic statement. I think we're at a point now where the players getting racially abused, you've got to come with action, not just a generic statement that the club stand against racism. We've got to just say, look, boom, next 4 or 5 days or next week. It's not going to use social media or something because, you know, it's just very cut and pasty statements now.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things for me that I saw about the Son abuse is a lot of Man United, I wouldn't say a lot of Man United fans, but I saw some Man United fans say, you know, it's horrible that he got racially abused, but he did dive. When a player is being racially abused, there is no buts. There's no room for but or but this, but that. It's abhorrent and it needs to be stamped out completely. There's no buts when it comes to that.
I'm sorry that he got racially abused, but he did dive.
Yeah.
That he deserved it, truly. That he deserved to get racially abused because he did dive. I was about to say he didn't dive, but it doesn't even matter, does it? It doesn't matter whether he dived, whether he done a front flip or a back flip. It's not even relevant. Do you know what? Like, we are, we all love football, but a large part of the people that love football are fucking cunts.
Indeed.
It doesn't matter. You only need to go into a pub in Tottenham and listen to the conversations that are being had there after something goes wrong or after Danny Rose has had a bad game and just hear it in the peripheries of you. The pub or the place where you're drinking, and you just hear it. So it's just, you know, it's just something that we don't have to deal with, or you don't have to deal with, T, more so than us. But it's a fucked up situation, and I'm getting. You must be sick of this going on. You must be, T.
It's tiresome, and the interesting thing is that. You know, in this case, the abuse was suffered by someone who's East Asian. And in the chairman's case, someone who's Jew. Anti-Semitism, there's so many tropes that do the rounds in the media. One of it's being what Levy earns and the money he makes for the club. And sometimes those are like, there's just very, very subtle digs at the media and some fans put in there. So getting that abuse isn't new, but it's very, very unpleasant. And I'm glad that, you know, the club have addressed it. Because I think David Lammy quote tweeted the guy and the club responded saying, yeah, we're looking into what the bloke said about Daniel Levy. And that's for Heung-Min Son. It's just, you know, it's a disgrace. And I just think, you know, as you said last week, Flav, I just think we're at a point now where the clubs have got to do something. Even if I'm not saying that the club boycotting social media for a week or whatever is going to stop racism, but it just shows that, look, we're doing something. Other than just saying, yeah, you know, it's abhorrent and we don't stand for it. It's given that the fans and the club stand behind Sonny, just take some action.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's all the stuff we said last week. Twice, in fact. And, you know, the Rangers have done it. they've done it. They've been the first club to take a step back and say, actually, we're not using your platform anymore. Spurs have to be the next one. And we'll keep pushing them, keep talking about it, and keep to be a part of a conversation and force Tottenham Hotspur to do something that actually means something, rather than just we back our players because you back their players. Of course you do. All right.
Absolutely.
Flanny's Filth, Billy, thank you so much, boys, and we'll be back on Friday with another podcast.
I'm a Spurs.
Take care. It's the Fight In. It's the Fight In. Clock. It's the Fight In. It's the Fight In. Clock. A Camel Tottenham. Sports Social Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network. Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? Of course you would. And when it comes to great rates on insurance, Geico can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with homeowners or renters coverage. Plus, add an easy-to-use mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more, and Geico is an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com or contact your local agent today. Sports Social Podcast Network. 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 When I clock out of the hospital at 6 p.m., I'm not done for the night. That's when Gamer Nurse 40 clocks in, and she's got orcs to slay. Sure, I'm playing a 13-year-old in Scranton, but he's a level 53 mage with a filthy mouth, so I need to stay on top of my game. What'd you call me? That's when I crack open a Heineken 00. Zero alcohol, but just as refreshing. So I can focus on stealing his gold before his mom tells him it's bedtime. Take that, kids. Heineken 00. 0.0% alcohol. Now you can. Must be 21 plus to purchase. Enjoy responsibly. Sports Social Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network. With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.